Welcome to The Debrief, everyone. The FBI is reportedly investigating one of the top associates of millionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Reuters is reporting that Ghislaine Maxwell is the subject of an FBI probe into who facilitated Epstein's alleged crimes. The report is based on unnamed law enforcement sources. The FBI generally never officially confirms its investigations. This investigation, as it's said to be, is in its early stages, and no one has been charged. Dramatic video and documents in the case of a Wisconsin teenager held captive by the man who admitted he killed her because he wanted to take her. Jake Patterson killed her family, I should say, and admitted he wanted to take her. Jake Patterson ultimately admitted to two counts of first-degree intentional homicide and one count of kidnapping in the case of Jamie Kloss. Patterson serving a life sentence without any chance of parole, plus an additional 40 years. This squad car video, released by the Barron County, Wisconsin Sheriff's Department, shows officers racing to the Kloss home after a short 911 call came from Jamie's mother's cell phone just seconds before she was shot and killed. While approaching the scene, officers passed Jake Patterson driving away. He yielded the right of way by pulling over to the shoulder. From there, audio captured the officer's arrival at the Kloss home. We've edited over some of it to show squad car footage as officers carefully approached the Kloss home in the dark of night. At first, officers weren't sure if this was a murder or if it was a suicide.
Sheriff's office!
You don't know that. There were several voices.
Sheriff's office! Who's inside?
Watch our asses,
John. Yep, I got your six. Yep.
Get on the radio, let them know. That Barron thing out.
Sheriff's office! Announce yourself!
Possible suicide if you want to, but I'm going to be out here, bro. I don't see a gun, guys, so let's not write it off as a suicide.
Hang on.
I'm going to run these 28s. I have EMS stage.
Eric, you want him to cover this door?
Have EMS stage.
Okay. Sheriff's office, if you're inside, announce!
You going to hold this for Barron PD? We got broken glass right there next to your elbow.
There's a shotgun shell, but I don't see a shotgun. Go grab a long gun.
Okay.
One at a time.
Yep.
Quickly. Two shotgun shells. This door was open?
Yep. This glass door right here, I'm kneeling open. It was closed.
Okay. John?
Yep.
I'm gonna hold this. You wanna grab my shield? Get my keys off my belt in here?
Yep.
Right there.
We're still missing a gun?
We're missing a lot.
Yep. I'm gonna stand here until Eric comes back with a long gun.
Have them advise 303, 301, one male down, deceased, for the house declared.
Notify 303 and 301, advise one male down, multiple rounds spent.
After discovering Jamie's father dead, officers then talked about clearing the home, and inside they found Jamie's mother. Again, this is sound from the officers' body cameras, which were playing under video from a squad car dash cam parked outside. Here, officers are talking about passing that suspicious car on their way to the scene and about going into the house, unsure of exactly what was inside.
I'm gonna run and grab your shield. I got my rifle. Yeah. I got my pistol. I'm sorry. If I got the shield, I'll take pistol.
That truck's been here. It's got leaves on it.
That one car was heading out as we were coming.
Well,
but they yielded.
On camera.
Camera? Yep. A couple things.
But why is there a shell inside? Is that shell spent? Can you tell, Eric? The one down the hallway?
Look like it.
Will, just grab a long gun and just cover our entry here, okay? Just a quick guess would be this is the homeowner or the resident dead. We might be missing our suspect. I don't know.
Slow and steady?
Slow and steady.
Sheriff's office! I'm gonna hold right here if you want to clear left and right.
hovering right. You want to, here, just both you dip into the living room, clear that completely.
We got doors, we got hallways. Eric, cover, I'm going to break left, you cover this room to the right, okay?
Okay.
Cover that room. We got a dead body in this one. We got a body in here too.
Get a shotgun.
I do not.
Dude, this... Something happened. There's doors kicked in right here. You want to double check? I'm assuming this person is deceased right here.
Patterson made Jamie Claus hide under his bed when he was gone during the day. After nearly 3 months, she was able to push aside some bins which trapped her, and she escaped Patterson's house. A neighbor found Jamie Claus walking in the street, and now we're hearing that neighbor's full 911 call.
I was walking my dog, and we were almost home. And she was walking towards me, crying, saying, "You gotta help me, you gotta help me."
And she said her name is Jamie Claus?
Yep. She thought he was gonna come back home at midnight.
Who's gonna come back?
Jake Thomas Patterson. She said, "He killed my parents. I wanna go home. Help me." She didn't know where she was. When I saw her, she was saying, "Where am I? Where am I?" And I said,
"Okay.
You're in Wisconsin."
And did she say, "He's gone right now"?
Yes. He turns the music up real loud. Sometimes he has people come over to watch her. People to come over. He's pushed you, hides you under a bed. He has hidden her under a bed.
Do you know Jake?
No. No, he's never really been. I mean, we only come up here, it's a cabin. So we only come up here periodically, but he's never been friendly or talked to me. And we've been here 4 years.
Okay, have you seen him, though?
No, I don't even know what he looks like. They're in the house. The cops are in the house. They just came in.
Okay, Jamie, perfect. Then I can let you go as long as the deputies are with you guys.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Good job.
Jake Patterson admitted he was the killer of Jamie Claus's parents and spoke in court just before the judge sentenced him. Here was what he said earlier this year.
I would do, like... absolutely anything to take back what I did, you know. I would die. I would do absolutely anything to... to bring them back, you know. I don't care about me, I'm just so sorry. That's all.
Let's bring our guests in tonight to discuss this case. Attorneys Michael Bryant and Nicole DeBoard are here, along with forensic death examiner Joseph Scott Morgan. So, Joseph, we avoided much of the forensic evidence we might have heard had this gone to trial, because the defendant admitted everything and pleaded guilty rather very early on in this case. But still, certainly, they were gathering some forensics just in case this did go to trial.
There would have been a bevy of bits of evidence that they could have put forth that would have been mind-blowing in this particular case. Everything from you heard the officers talking about they had already found spent shotgun shells out there. There was a lot of blood evidence at the scene, not to mention the signs of forced entry. So there's a lot of scientific evidence they could have brought to bear in this particular case.
Exactly, Joseph. And we heard that discussion from the officers back and forth. You know, is this some kind of a suicide, a murder-suicide, or do we need to be looking for a suspect? And you hear them saying, wait a minute, there are people injured, but we don't have guns laying there, so obviously they're looking for something.
They certainly are. And I think their biggest fear, obviously, is their personal safety at the beginning. You know, they're talking about making entry into this residence. And I've heard it said so far, some of the communications I picked up, that this was, in the softest terms I can possibly, one of the most graphic scenes that these officers had ever incurred. Just keep in mind, this is a very isolated rural area. They're not used to seeing this kind of thing.
Exactly. Nicole DeBoard, Jamie Claus's aunt, has released a couple of pictures here and there of Jamie on Facebook, basically announcing to the world that she's doing pretty well, all things considered. Legally speaking, Wisconsin law doesn't require premeditation in order to get the top murder count in that state. It just requires intent. But here the evidence was so clear that we had both that that authorities could have made a really strong trial had they wanted to.
Absolutely. It was the only thing this defendant could do was to plead guilty. It was the exact right thing to do to save this family even more grief than what he's already put them through.
And Michael Bryant here along with me now, the defendant in prison in New Mexico, apparently for safety. He's not in Wisconsin. He's apparently refusing visitors and phone calls. He's barely speaking to anyone. Is this a lock him away, throw away the key scenario?
You know, I'd hate to put it in those terms, but let's face it, he's not got a lot of fans. And I'm not sure he's safe anywhere, ultimately. We'll have to see if he's moved again, better protected again. But no, he's not winning any popularity contests in prison, that's for sure.
Let's bring everybody up to speed on a documentary series Law and Crime is airing over the case of Ohio teenager Skylar Richardson, who was accused of giving birth in secret and murdering her newborn baby. This episode that we've released recently focuses on Skylar's first police interrogation in July 2017. You can watch it all on our Facebook page.
And I tried to see if she'd wake up, but I had to bury her. And I think that's, am I going to be in trouble for that? I know it wasn't right.
For trying to see if she could
breathe, and I had to bury her.
Why do you decide you have to bury her?
Because I couldn't tell anybody.
Because you hadn't told anybody and you still didn't want to tell anybody.
It's really bad. I didn't, I loved
her.
No,
it's just, it's not for us to say.
Are you going
to
put me in jail because of that?
No, I'm not. That's not why I'm here today, to try to put you in jail. We're still just trying to find out what happened, okay? Did you know where you would bury her?
I just wanted to bury her in my backyard so we could put flowers on her.
Okay.
Now it's July 14th. If the date is accurate that took place on May the 7th, that's at least 9 weeks. Where if these details are accurate, the baby's remains have been decomposing. And so I know from an evidence perspective, it's going to make things very difficult.
On now to another case we're watching out of Austin, Texas, where funeral services are happening today for the mother found dead, her newborn baby found alive. Heidi Broussard and her infant, Margot Carey, vanished around 7:30 in the morning back on December 12th. Broussard's body turned up in the trunk of a car owned by her longtime friend, Megan Faramuska, who will appear in court after the new year to face 2 counts of kidnapping and 1 count of tampering with evidence, a human corpse. And still ahead here on The Debrief, a Hollywood movie producer will soon stand trial for alleged sex crimes. The accusers and the defense will break down both sides of this upcoming high-profile trial when we return. New documents are raising questions about the injury suffered by movie producer Harvey Weinstein. As his criminal trial approaches, Weinstein has attended hearings using a walker. His attorneys say he needed back surgery recently after an August car crash. However, accident reports uncovered by the TV show Inside Edition say Weinstein, the driver, was not injured, nor was anyone else. Plus, a 911 caller said the guy's okay, but the car flipped and it's in the road. A Weinstein spokesperson said the reports simply indicated Weinstein did not need an ambulance at the scene, but that injuries from the crash required later medical intervention. Attorney David Ring represents an Italian actress accusing Weinstein of assault. He explained on the Law and Crime Network recently why prosecutors will be allowed to call many accusers at the criminal trial, even though Weinstein hasn't been formally charged with assaulting them.
It's all about these victims. I mean, they're going to parade 6 very credible women to the stand. They're all going to tell very compelling stories, and they're all going to have the exact same theme. Harvey Weinstein aggressively, forcibly committed sexual assault against them over a span of 20 plus years. In sexual crime cases, it is incredibly important to hear that the alleged perpetrator has a pattern of engaging in that type of conduct. And so what the courts allow is to have what I call other Me Too witnesses who are allowed, even though he's not charged with that particular crime against that particular female, that female is allowed to come in and basically say, hey, he did basically the similar thing to me back then. And the jury's allowed to hear that so that it's not just a he said, she said situation. They get to hear that this defendant has a pattern, has a history of committing sexual assault against women.
More than 80 women have accused Weinstein of wrongdoing, and many of them have spoken to us here at Law and Crime. Canadian actress Erica Rosenbaum says Weinstein sexually assaulted her on 3 separate occasions some 15 years ago.
I think I carried a lot of guilt for not being more assertive, perhaps, for not being more aggressive. Now I feel very much that the responsibility was on him to not step out of line, and not on me as a young person to defend myself appropriately. He was my superior in every way. He was much older, he was much larger, and he was, you know, for all intents and purposes, my boss or the boss at any Hollywood party or in any Hollywood room. And he should have acted accordingly. And it is not on the young person who is in a vulnerable position to defend themselves properly. It is on the person in power to act appropriately.
Actress Catherine Kendall claims Weinstein sexually assaulted her in 1993 when she was rising up in the movie industry.
When I think of all he did for women, I keep thinking of all he did to women. I mean, he did more. He shattered more people. He broke more people's dreams. He tortured people. He absolutely tortured people. And it seems like he did way more of that than he did buoy up women and help different women have careers. And even the ones he helped have careers, he hurt them also at the same time. It's incredible that there's a trial. I mean, when I first, you know, spoke in 2019 or 17, to think that it would come to this, to think that for 20 years before that, I lived with this thinking, well, it just isn't something anyone's ever going to care about. So this is the way the world goes. And it really was the way the world went. I mean, that was not moving or changing. And to think that not only did all these women come forward, but there's a trial is incredibly moving.
Actress Larissa Gomez was a plaintiff in the class action lawsuit that recently settled with the Weinstein Company for $25 million. Gomez claims Weinstein grabbed her in a hotel room in 2000.
It was terrifying. I just wanted to get out of that situation. I did not even really understand at the time, because I was so young, whether that was even considered harassment, assault, sexual violence, and you know, it was very confusing to me, and I was fearful. As a victim, I personally don't feel like I need an admission of guilt. I know what he did, you know. But I think that this trial will prove him guilty.
Outside court earlier this month, Weinstein's defense attorney slammed back at the accusers who disagreed with her tactics. She says Weinstein deserves constitutional due process just like any other defendant.
Mr. Weinstein is looking forward to January 6th as he has from the very beginning. Mr. Weinstein has a right to a fair trial. He is believed to be innocent until proven guilty under the laws of this great country. And if we fail to recognize that or remember that, we're not only doing Mr. Weinstein a disservice, we're doing all of us a disservice. And I think the problem that I've had, especially as of late, especially given the prosecutor's desire to try to gag me from speaking to all of you, Mr. Weinstein has a right to cross-examine and question his accusers. He has a right to ask questions. He has a right through his lawyers to cross-examine the stories that they tell, which we intend to do, and we have a right to do. And in doing so, it is not victim shaming. It is not putting people in circumstances that they were not going to be put in any other circumstance for any other case. And just because a woman makes a claim does not mean that it is true. And just because Mr. Weinstein is accused of a crime does not mean that he is guilty. He is having surgery tomorrow for his back. We insisted that he use a walker today. The press berated him last week and said he was faking and he was pretending. We wanted him to use a walker last week, and Mr. Weinstein didn't want the press to think he was seeking sympathy. He is in pain, he's having surgery, and we will be back in court on January 6th for trial.
Let's jump in with everybody here to round out the broadcast. Joseph Scott Morgan, what do you make of this car accident information? Could it be that he was injured, he just didn't need to be transported? Could the injury have become more exaggerated as time went on and then resulted in the surgery that he ultimately had since that attorney gave those comments a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I suppose anything's within the realm of possibility, you know, but I'm too much of a cynic.
Wow. I even more this. So than me?
Yeah, actually, I probably am. You see this as it is bookended with the upcoming trial. It's just a bit too much for me. And these images that we're seeing wheeling across the screen here, it's I'm not even going to say it's a head scratcher.
Well, I guess Joseph can scratch his head down in a college in Alabama. So let's jump in here with Nicole DeBord. Nicole, what I'm hearing from many of the accusers we've interviewed is a lot of just, you know, general horrible commentary about Weinstein. When they get up on the witness stand, assuming some of them are going to be called to testify, I'm guessing we're going to have to get a lot more fact-based testimony out of them about exactly what was done.
Exactly. They're going to have to testify about exactly what happened, where it happened, what the circumstances were. And it's a whole lot different testifying in question-answer form when you can be cross-examined about everything that comes out of your mouth than it is when you just sit down and you sort of give this free-for-all statement about what has occurred. So I think it'll be interesting to see how all of this testimony plays out on the stand.
Oh, certainly. And I'm thinking of the new rule. It used to be that there was a so-called sexual character rule in evidence. Apparently, that's now the Me Too rule. That's probably how law professors are teaching it now. Michael Bryant, what's the defense here?
Well, the defense is everything was consensual. Everything happened because we both wanted it to happen. I mean, it's that simple, really. But because it's not a he said, she said anymore with this other act evidence, it makes it a lot harder on the defense.
It's a lot harder to turn around and say this many people are basically agreeing to something consensual when they're all getting up there saying, no, this was not consensual. I agree with that, and that's why the rules of evidence work that way. Thanks a lot to the panelists for joining us tonight. Thanks for those of you sticking with me. I hope to shake this cold by next week. It'll be a lot easier to read the copy. As Michael Bryant laughs at me on the side, I'll see you on Monday.